bucks. Crude is falling on reports that supplies remain abundant. I'm Kelly Sloan, and you're listening to USA Radio News.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they'll live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their own terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within your reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton, Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services, Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC.
On today's program, I'll be talking about the seven metrics all entrepreneurs must track, what employers want in older workers, the five signs your company wants you to quit, why I'm mad at the Girl Scouts, why it's a good time to be a digital marketer, and five of the most common mistakes candidates make when working with a recruiter. All that and more right now on Taking Care of Business.
And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all right. Taking care of business and working overtime. What else?
Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's a little after noon o'clock, and that can only mean one thing on a Thursday. It's time for another edition of Taking Care of Business. I'm your host, Jim Gano. I'll be with you for the next hour as we talk about issues affecting businesses large and small here in Flemington, New Jersey, in beautiful Hunterdon County, and on the national scene as well. Before we get going, a brief check of the weather shows the temperature is currently 18 degrees in Flemington at 12:05. And the forecast shows that today it's going to be mostly cloudy with snow flurries possible. There is a wind chill advisory in effect, bringing temperatures down to a feels-like temperature of 10 to 15 below. We're going to reach a high. We've already exceeded that at 17 degrees and a dip to a low of minus 3 tonight. For tomorrow, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 19 degrees and a low of 0. Saturday, it'll be cloudy with snow and ice possible and a high of 32 degrees with a low of 29. On Sunday, a little bit of freaky weather as it will be cloudy with a high of 47 degrees, a low of 20, and occasional rain throughout the day. And then on Monday, we get back into the deep freeze. Current check of the financial market shows the Dow is down 21.24 to 18,008.61. The NASDAQ is up 19.88 to 4926.25. S&P 500 up 1.05 to 2100.73. Oil down $1.90 to $50.92 per barrel, and gold is up $11.40 to $1,211.20 an ounce.
When I'm away, every day.
Well, once again, we got to put the strains of Bachman Turner Overdrive away for a few minutes, and always glad to hear the song Taking Care of Business, because that can only mean one thing. We're back together again on a Thursday afternoon, and as we start every show, I kind of rewind what's been going on over the past week, and this past weekend was my big shot to be the hero, if you will. It was Valentine's weekend, and typically my wife and I, we don't really celebrate Valentine's weekend. She firmly believes that this is just a holiday that was drummed up by the Hallmark Corporation to sell more cards and candies and chocolates. And she goes, you know, before you spend $90 on roses, wait a week and you can get me roses next week for $12. And it's very practical, and I appreciate that. And so we were talking about, well, what could we do? And we had my son's girlfriend in from Long Island over the weekend, and she said, look, I'll take care of dinner. Now, she had been hinting that she wanted Thai food. I said, you know what? I'll take care of dinner. And she goes, nope, I've got it all set. We're going to have some steak. We're going to have some crab legs, some clams, and it'll be a good dinner. Everybody will be home, so that'll be fine. I said, fine, then I'm taking care of dessert, because she'd also hinted at a certain dessert that she liked, and I said, well, I was going to do this. So Saturday I worked at the shop, Crown Trophy, till 1 o'clock, left there. Then I had to go announce a basketball game in Bridgewater over at the high school, and after that I went to the Bridgewater Commons Mall. Now, usually when I go to the Bridgewater Commons Mall, I break out in hives. This time I didn't actually do that. So I decided I'm going to get this dessert that my wife wants. So I go to the Godiva shop, Godiva Chocolatiers. And when I walk in, a woman, you know, comes right up to me. She says, how can I help you? And I explained to her what I'm looking for. And there's 30 or 40 people in this tiny little shop. The queue for getting people in and out was a little, you know, back-asswards, if you will. And you know, so it was just a very confusing time. It was very hot in there, and I just wanted to get in and get out. So my wife likes dark chocolate-covered strawberries. So I mentioned this to the woman, and she goes, well, we have, you know, we only have dark chocolate available right now. They're in the boxes behind you. So I quickly grab two boxes, go to the register, and I'm set. So I think this is going to be great. Everybody's going to be happy. Everybody will have two chocolate-covered strawberries after dinner. I'll be the hero. So we get to the cash register and didn't bother to look at a price, didn't ask for what the price was. How much could a chocolate-covered strawberry really cost? And how much could a dozen of them really cost? Well, we found out really quickly that a dozen chocolate-covered strawberries cost about $104 at Godiva Chocolatiers. Now, with all the people behind me in the line, didn't want to be embarrassed and say, well, I'll only take six. So I took both boxes, walked out of there with the tail between my legs, and I go home. So we have our dinner, and everything's great. We have our seafood, and we're gobbling down clams and crab legs and the steak, and everything is great. And there was much joy in the Gonneau household as we were enjoying this dinner. So I get up, and I go out to the refrigerator. I put all the strawberries on a plate, and I bring them out. And my wife starts laughing. She goes, what did you do? I said, well, I went, and I bought chocolate-covered strawberries. She goes, well, they're huge. Where'd you get them? And I said, I got them at Godiva. And she goes, you did what? I said, well, I got to make a dive. She goes, you spent like $5 per strawberry. I said, actually, it's six. And so then my kids start doing the math, and like, oh, my God, that's like $100. So we go ahead and enjoy our chocolate-covered strawberries. My wife gets up from the table, goes to the refrigerator, brings out a package of about 15 chocolate-covered strawberries that she got for about $7 at Wegmans. And although they were good, they were expensive and probably not something I'm going to be repeating next year. During the show preview, I did mention that I was a little mad at the Girl Scouts. And this is something that this is probably out of everything that's going on in the world. This crisis probably needs some intervention from the president, from Congress. They should be able to get the Joint Chiefs of Staff involved. This is serious, and I'm absolutely beside myself. I've mentioned in the past that my friend's daughter, Paige, always text messages me and asks for my order early, and I instantly, you know, reply back and say, three boxes of trefoils, please. Well, we have a crisis in Girl Scout land right now, ladies and gentlemen, and if you're a fan like myself of Girl Scout cookies, we may have to wait a little while longer to get our cookies, and that's because of the Thin Mints. Now, if you are a Girl Scout cookie fan, your tag-along and Samoa orders might take a little longer than expected this year, and the culprit for a slight delay on deliveries to a small percentage of customers is the ever-so-popular Thin Mints, which have become back-ordered this year. Now, Little Brownie Bakers, the Kellogg-owned company that makes and manufactures Girl Scout cookies, are behind in producing the minty chocolate-coated cookie, which has been in high demand since it's made its debut in 1940. And because of Thin Mint production shortages, Little Brownie Bakers has rescheduled deliveries of all cookie varieties to the affected troops from March 16th to March 21st. During our busiest point in the season, our bakers make about 9 million Thin Mints, Girl Scout USA told ABC News. The organization, which began in 1912, reportedly sells around 200 million boxes of cookies each season. About 25% of boxes are the popular Thin Mints. And as of now, Girl Scout USA said 6% of its 112 Girl Scout councils are affected by the back order. Jennifer Thompson, who's the Senior Director of Marketing and Communications of Girl Scouts Hearts of New Jersey told ABC News that all customers who bought Thin Mints from the 2,000 troops in her council will be experiencing a delay. Right there in New Jersey, it's saying that we're going to experience a delay. I will not get my three boxes of trefoils in time because somebody couldn't make enough Thin Mints. Little Brownie saw they weren't able to keep up with the initial delivery date, she said. The only cookie affected right now is the Thin Mint. And they've been told by Little Brownie that the cookies will be a little delayed, but they are assuring that they are working 24/7 to fulfill every order. Chris Charles, who's a Kellogg Company spokeswoman, issued the following statement to ABC News. While overall demand for Thin Mints has been greater than expected this season, we are working to ensure every order is delivered in a timely manner. The overwhelming amount of cookie sales aren't upsetting the Girl Scouts Heart of New Jersey troops, though. It is a function of exceeding what we thought they'd do this year, which is great for the girls, Thompson said. Because they're fulfilled differently than traditional orders, cookies ordered online through Digital Cookie will not be impacted by delivery delays. Well, who knew that I could order my cookies online? Huh. Who needs Paige anyway? Well, now, as you can see, we have to get the Navy, the Coast Guard, the Marines out there. We need people baking Thin Mints as quickly as possible because now my trefoils are delayed. This is an outrage. I don't care about budgets being passed. I don't care about poverty. I care about my trefoils. Let's get this done and get it done now. All right, a little bit of humor here for our day. We're going to step away, take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the 7 startup metrics that all entrepreneurs must track. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hello, this is psychic medium Trish Woods with the program Afterlife Real Life that airs every Thursday from 1 to 3 p.m. My co-host is psychic medium Jane Davidson from the United Kingdom. We have listeners and callers from all over the world. We're looking forward to hearing what you want to know about with metaphysics, spirituality, personal spirit experiences, psychic work, and more. From 1 to 3 p.m. every Thursday, you can call in or tune in, asking Jane and I your questions, your personal ideas, and maybe getting help with your own personal life. Afterlife Real Life, every Thursday, 1 to 3 p.m.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Hi, this is Joe Peters at Weikert Realtors. If you are considering buying or selling a house this year, you have probably already gathered a lot of information. In a way, that is a little like taking a drink of water out of a fire hose in that you're no longer thirsty and at the same time are a little overwhelmed by all of the information that you have found. This is where I can be of help. As a local real estate market specialist, I can help you by understanding your objectives, showing you how to assemble that information that you've already found, supplementing it with highly accurate and timely data that I have access to, and assisting you in developing a strategy to turn your objectives into reality. Let's start by spending a few minutes over the telephone. Please give me a call at 908-238-0118 to get that process started. If you are considering buying or selling a house this year, we should be talking now. Once again, this is Joe Peters at Weikert Realtors at 908-238-0118. And you could also visit my site at my first initial J, my last name, Peters.com.
Do you need a great sign to promote your business or organization? Signs by Crown of Flemington is your local professional sign shop and can provide you with high-quality banners, lawn signs, vehicle graphics, pop-up displays, window graphics, wall lettering, magnets, and much more. Signs by Crown can help you with the design, layout, creation, and installation of your signs. Signs by Crown is located inside Crown Trophy at 33 Rayville Avenue in Flemington. Remember, if you have something to say, say it with a sign from Signs by Crown. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. Glad you could join us for another edition. Currently 12:18 here in Flemington, New Jersey. I'd like to say hello to Jack up in snowy Boston and Lori out in Phoenix listening in today. So thanks for joining us. Well, if you're in business, you may be so focused on getting your business to the next level that you're ignoring your metrics. And not spending enough time gauging your business's progress can be just as harmful as wasting your time with needless emails or Excel sheets. You may also be so focused on getting your business to the next level, chasing funding and finding the right talent, that you are ignoring developing metrics to monitor your success. But without strategic planning, you're lost. And you can't plan if you have no frame of reference for where you are. Now, I found that these seven metrics, which roll up into three top-level categories called sales metrics, customer metrics, and finance metrics, are good starting points. First is the revenue run rate. As you start to grow your business, develop a working product, gain customers, and execute on your plan, you need to start measuring how your business is scaling. Your revenue run rate measures how sales are developing over time. It helps you see how likely you are to hit your forecast, captures directional trends, picks up patterns, which is anything associated with seasonality, and can tease out potential problems with your pricing strategy. The average revenue per user, or the ARPU, is a measure of a customer's average contribution to revenue. A rising level means you're getting more sales from each customer and or you have pricing power. Of course, that's just a starting point. An average can't tell you anything about the quality of your sales. We all know that some customers are more valuable than others. You need to get really granular and look at how sales break down by channel and customer type so that you can tease out trends and devote resources to optimizing your customer mix and boosting your share in the wallet. Customer metrics, building traction. Customer acquisition costs. This is one thing that many businesses ignore but should pay a lot of attention to. And if you ever watch the show Shark Tank, they talk about it all the time. What is your customer acquisition cost? Do you know how much it costs you to attract each new customer? That's what your CAC will show you. It's a good way to monitor how efficient your sales process and sales teams are. If the proportion of spend to impact is not improving over time, you need to make some changes. What is your churn rate? How sticky is your customer base? Your churn rate shows how well you hold on to customers. The absolute value is important, but again, so is the trend. It should descend over time. If it suddenly spikes or plateaus at a high level, you need to figure out why and let the numbers be your guide. There's a wealth of other customer metrics that feed into these high-level ones. How long on average do your customers stick with you? How profitable are they? And how do they vary by sales channel? The financial management metrics, it basically is cash flow. What is your burn rate? Staying on top of your burn rate, which is how much cash goes out the door every month, is critical. Now, in my experience, running out of cash is the number one reason that startups fail. It's also an important focus for investors. Knowing your rate is like looking down the track toward a finish line with a stopwatch running. You need to know how much time is left before you run out of money, how close you are to breaking even, or when you'll start generating profits. You also need to know your operation efficiency. How much operational efficiency does your startup have? In other words, are you getting a return on your spending, or are you shortchanging your business by underinvesting in critical but low-profile areas? The ratio of selling, general, and administrative expenses to sales will give you this picture. You'll have discretion in areas like sales, marketing, and payroll, but not for expenses like overhead and utilities. Low margins could signal that your cost structure is out of whack and that you're spending too much to get the business to scale. Your pricing is too low, a combination of some or all of the above. Outsourcing as much as you can is one way to get a handle on some of the biggest drivers. But when you're just ramping up, you'll need to spend more on sales and marketing to get traction. Spending in the right proportions will deliver the most bang for your buck, and the results will eventually show up in your sales and cash figures.
You also need to be mindful of your gross margins. Your gross margins measure your operating profitability. Both the level and the trend are important. You should know what kind of gross margin is typical for your industry so you have a sense of where you stack up. Operating margins may not be meaningful yet. You might not be making any profits, but they're a good goal. Gross margins will tell you how effective your management, sales, and customer teams are at driving the business, what stage of the curve your business is in, what operating levers you can use to drive growth, and how close you are to inflection points. Those seven metrics are just a start, and it makes sense to compare yourself to companies operating in the same industry and of similar size and stage of development, if you can get the data. But to really be valuable and help you achieve your milestones, you also need to come up with measures that are specific to your business. So hopefully those metrics are something that you're already looking at, but something that all businesses, not just startups, should be keeping a mind on. Well, in Flemington, it was announced the other night and appeared in the newspaper today. We've lost a couple of businesses recently. Nike, Reebok, and now the Gallo Rosso restaurant over in the Shops of Flemington have all closed within the last month, Gallo Rosso serving its last meal on February 7th. Now, this is significant because the liquor license that Gallo Rosso had will now transfer over to the owners of the Union Hotel, which also owned Gallo Rosso. But it appears as if the owners of the Union Hotel property are having a little trouble with their final plans, and Mayor Phil Greiner has now, at the council meeting the other night, asked for some action to determine what is the plans for the hotel. Now, if you're familiar with the Union Hotel, it closed in 2008, hasn't served a meal since 2008, and hasn't had an overnight guest since the 1950s. So here we are 7 years later, and still no real concrete plans for how they're going to develop that property. A lot of folks in Flemington are saying that the Union Hotel property is what is going to be contingent on the rebirth of Flemington. I personally tend to disagree. I think there's other factors that Flemington brings to the table that can make this a viable community and a viable business community. But for right now, a lot of folks are kind of putting all the eggs in one basket. I'm going to be perfectly honest, and I'm going to go on the record right now and say, if they bulldozed the Union Hotel today, I wouldn't miss it. We have to come up with a way of making Main Street viable again. And if it means that we have to lose this treasure, so be it. But we have to move forward. We can't keep looking back into the past. So we'll keep our eyes on this story. I'm sure this is going to be evolving as we keep moving forward. And any updates that we have on the Union Hotel development and property, we'll bring to you here. Well, one of the things that people often get afraid of in their advancing years is, what happens if I lose my job? What happens if my company goes under and I'm in my 50s or 60s, but I'm still, in my mind, able to work? Well, if you're over the age of 50 and you're looking for a job, it helps to know what employers want. A recent Society for Human Resources Management and Sloan Foundation survey of 1,913 human resources professionals asked what companies are looking for in older employees. And here's how older workers can impress potential employers. First, demonstrate your experience. The majority of employers, 77%, recognize that older workers tend to have more knowledge and skills than younger employees. Some companies also commented on the valuable tacit knowledge, 51%, and institutional knowledge, 47%, that only experienced employees who have worked at an organization or in a field for many years can acquire, Sherm found during their survey. And make sure that your decades of work experience are perceived as an asset. You also need to emphasize your network. Older workers have a lifetime of accumulated contacts and colleagues. Some employers are interested in tapping into the established network of clients and customers older workers have access to. That was represented by 39% of the surveys. Being able to bring new business into the company is a great way to get hired. You also want to keep it professional. Companies typically perceive older workers as being more mature and professional, 71%, and more reliable, 59%, than their younger counterparts. Human resources professionals also say that older workers tend to have a stronger work ethic, represented by 70% of the respondents, and don't give potential employers any reason to think that this stereotype doesn't apply to you. You also want to highlight your communication skills. Some employers say they are looking for older workers who have proficient grammar and spelling. That's 45% of the respondents. Reading comprehension is 20%, English speaking skills 20%. A resume and cover letter without any spelling or grammar errors is the perfect place to demonstrate your writing ability. Other employers are looking for critical thinking and problem-solving skills. That was represented by 28% of the survey. And you should be prepared to list examples of workplace problems that you encountered and what you did to fix them. make a commitment to the company. Some firms say they are interested in hiring older workers because they perceive them to be more loyal to the company. That was represented by 52%, and they tend to have lower turnover, also 52%. They are also looking for older workers who would be committed to and engaged with workplace goals, 51%. If you're planning to remain in the workforce for the long term, it can be helpful to point that out to potential employers. You should also indicate your willingness to pass on your skills. Many human resources departments say they are interested in older workers who are able to serve as mentors to younger workers, and that was up to 63%. Just over half, 54% of the employers surveyed, say they have training programs designed to transfer knowledge from older to younger workers, typically through mentoring or job shadowing programs. Find out where recruiters are looking for older workers. While 54% of the firms surveyed say they do not actively recruit older workers, some firms are making an effort to hire people in their 50s or older. Companies often turn to employee referrals at 33% and networking 24% to find experienced employees. Other common ways to try to search for older job candidates include websites geared towards an older audience, that's 14%, using current older workers as recruiters, 13%, employment agencies, 13%, and social media, 12%. Among employers that use social media to recruit older workers, the most popular social networking sites for job opportunities at 74% of respondents is LinkedIn, and Facebook at 49%. So there is hope out there for any workers over the ages of 50 who fear that there's going to be some form of hiring bias in that the companies. And this is, when I was a recruiter, one of the things that we always talked about with the older candidates was you have to emphasize your experience and how that experience coupled with the new knowledge base from the younger workers could help projects move along. I worked in the pharmaceutical industry, and one of the things that we found was that when companies would do these massive layoffs after a merger, they would get rid of all of the older workers. They'd offer them retirement packages. And I kept arguing with those companies that when you do that, you're getting rid of all of your experience. You're replacing it with 25 to 35-year-olds who've never seen a product through from cradle to grave development. And as a result, they're going to get stuck along the way. Many times those companies had to hire back some of those people who were sent off to early retirement as consultants, paying nearly double the salary to do so because they did need that guidance further on in the project. So it's not the end of the world if you're over 50 and you lose a job. You just have to know how the right way is to present yourself to potential employers. Now, that's how to get hired. How do you know if you're in the crosshairs and your company is looking for to find ways to make you quit? Well, there's usually typically five signs that you can see in that your company is looking for you to leave. Now, if you're worried about upcoming layoffs or you're concerned that your boss isn't thrilled with you, here are a few things to keep in mind. In a perfect world, you and your boss would get along swimmingly with a free exchange of ideas that leads to promotions, all while your company continues to grow and thrive. But let's face it, that's a rare situation. Often, instead, you begrudgingly do the work you are assigned as your boss tries to accomplish unrealistic goals and timelines dictated from up above. All the while, you're looking for the next opportunity to flee. This was especially the case for employees in the last few years before businesses began to hire again. What happens, though, when the dynamic shifts and your company wants you out? Already in 2015, eBay has announced it will cut 7% of its workforce. Oil company Baker Hughes, hit by low oil prices, has announced it will let go 7,000 employees. And DreamWorks Animation will cut around 15% of its workforce, according to industry reports. Then again, financial stability may not be the only reason that a company may want you to quit. Put simply, your boss, or perhaps your boss's boss, may not like you. You might have gotten into an argument with the wrong executive, or your work may be leaving something to be desired. Remember, knowledge is power. Knowing that you may very well be shown the door will give you the opportunity to start networking. So the choice becomes yours if you stay or leave, says Amanda Augustine, who's a career coach and resume writer for job search site The Ladders. So keep these five signals in mind if you're worried about upcoming layoffs or concerned that your boss isn't thrilled with you. If you've been sent to the periphery, Lisa Quast, who's a career coach in Seattle, Washington, had a client call her up worried that her boss no longer picked her for prime roles on projects. The client had a good relationship with the manager, and she couldn't figure out why she was suddenly being cast aside. After some probing by Quast, the client realized that she had yelled at her boss around other employees and then immediately left the next day for an extended vacation. I bet her boss just sat and stewed during the employee's vacation, says Quast. When the employee came back, then the repercussions occurred. If you feel that your boss has suddenly started to pick others for choice assignments, first think about some of the ways you might have offended your manager. Maybe you turned in a report late, which he got in trouble for. Maybe she saw you shopping instead of working. Maybe you accidentally CC'd his boss on an email you weren't supposed to. It could be any number of reasons. If you did have a run-in with your boss, go ahead and apologize. If they accept your apology and things improve, you're likely in the clear. If things remain icy, well, at least you know. If you're overdue for a performance review, during the recession, it wasn't uncommon for companies to delay or even forget about performance reviews. With everyone worried about the future of the company, most managers had little time to focus on your professional future. But that's reversing as hiring continues to gain steam and competition for talent heats up. If you hadn't had a review in over a year, make sure to ask for one. You should be receiving regular feedback, says the latter's Augustine, especially if you ask for that feedback and they are skirting the issue. On the other hand, if you are getting regular feedback, but it's always accompanied with others in the room and documented through email, you should start sending out your resume. Your boss may be building a case to let you go. Also, if you're on the outside looking in, you see this all the time. A company decides that one part of its business is underperforming while another segment has plenty of room to grow. In that situation, plenty of businesses will shift investment from its laggard to the upstart. According to reports, AOL is doing this, sending more money to online titles that have performed well, while other groups will soon face layoffs. Even transitions within departments can render you jobless if you're a member of the wrong team. It's smart to keep your ear to the ground. Talk with members of other departments around the water cooler, says Augustine. Plus, who knows, if your department folds, you might find that you could be an asset to another part of the company. Also, if there's a new sheriff in town, new CEOs often opt to make staff cuts when they arrive. Some do this to focus the company on something their predecessor overlooked. Shortly after his February 2014 ascension, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella announced the largest round of layoffs in the company's history. In part, the company could focus on new technology and trends like the Internet of Things. Anytime you have a new boss, you always need to be alert, says Augustine. She recommends evaluating why there's a new head. Is it because of an overall change in vision in how the company will run? Will your department suffer from this new focus? How close were you to the old regime? The closer you were to previous leaders, the more concerned you should be. In this case, you should schedule some time with your new manager. Feel them out and see how they view your role in the changing company. If they're short on details or you get a sense they're not interested in your help, then you should start looking for a new gig. Your role overlaps with that of your colleagues. Sometimes your job is at risk for reasons that are completely out of your control, like when your company enters a merger acquisition. It's expected that after the deal is finalized, they will go through the company with a fine-tooth comb, says Quast. Quast says that departments like human resources and marketing are often hit hardest during these transitions, as merged companies are likely to have role duplication in these areas. If you work with external clients or customers, you have a better chance of surviving, at least at first. In these situations, your boss will also be out of the loop in layoff plans. Quast says you should protect yourself by reaching out to your contacts now, and that way you can find a new job on your own ahead of time. So there's a couple of telltale signs that you might be in the crosshairs with your bosses or your boss's bosses when it comes time. If generally people get a sense, a gut feeling that something's wrong with their job security, once you get that feeling, it's time to start dusting off that resume and making sure that it accurately reflects the work that you do, and that you can be a little proactive in a job search rather than reactive. Well, I found this story very interesting because it reminded me of when I was a recruiter and some of the mistakes that candidates make when working with a recruiter. And even though we're seeing now unemployment at around 5.9%, there are still a lot of people, and the national trend from the folks I'm talking to is saying that employment is closer to 7 or 8%. It's just that 2 to 3% of the workforce has stopped looking altogether. But the reported number being 5.9% still represent millions of Americans out of work. So if you are one of those and you're working with a recruiter, here's five of the most common mistakes that you can possibly be making when working with a recruiter, and you should stop them now. Now, searching for a job is never easy. The process requires strategy, patience, and a whole lot of attention to detail. In addition to your stellar resume, in the online world, you must manage your various social media accounts and online perception and reputation. Add to this the oftentimes necessity of working with a recruiter who is representing the hiring company, and the whole process can become overwhelming. Before we go further, anytime that you post something on Facebook, LinkedIn, if MySpace is still out there, MySpace, Pinterest, all those, if it's attached to you, and don't think for a second that the hiring authority isn't doing a quick search. We've talked about this in the past on this show where your image is everything. We've talked about where some companies are actually requiring you to give them your Facebook password so they can kind of look into your background. What are you posting about? Are you writing about a bad experience with your boss, bad experience with your company? Are you saying how much you hate work? Are you posting pictures, risque pictures at a party or something like that? They want to know who you are before they hire you. So be careful when you're making those posts. If you want to email a friend a picture from a party, that's fine. But when you post it on Facebook, it's out there for everybody, including a potential hiring authority, to see. Now, people tend to understand the mechanics of resume writing and interviewing, and they're even becoming savvy at online job search and the tools available. But the whole realm of working with a recruiter is still ambiguous and mysterious to many. At the very least, this can lead to sub-optimizing your job search, so here are a few insights to help remedy this. We work for who? Perhaps the most common misunderstanding about the work of recruiters pertains to who they work for. Recruiters, whether retained or even those that work on a contingency basis, are duty-bound to the company that is seeking to fill the role. This is particularly true for retained executive recruiters. They get hired by Company A to fill a particular position and hence are contracted to find the best and most suitable candidates who meet the specific criteria set out for the search. That's not to say that they're not always in the market to receive resumes and talk to new people. It just means that as a job seeker, your expectation should not be that the recruiter will search for an opportunity on your behalf. Compensation sensitivities. Traditionally, you're led to believe that they must defer any discussion of compensation until you're well into the interview process. This is a common misstep with working with recruiters. Think about how much time can be wasted if there is no possibility of alignment on this very important aspect of any job. Typically, you'll be asked details in the first or second phone call. And the recruiter isn't trying to pry. It's just an innocuous question to determine whether your current or desired future compensation is in the same ballpark as the potential for the position in question. And this question should not make you squirm. So be prepared with facts and future expectations and try to remove any emotionality from your answer. Recruiters are professionals, and this information is for practical purposes and should always be kept confidential. Recruiters' phone calls. Even if you don't have an interest in the position that they're recruiting for, it can be a mistake not to return the call or email. Building a relationship with a recruiter, particularly one that works in your field or industry, can yield long-term benefits. You never know when you'll be in the job market, and that is not the time to begin establishing recruiter relationships. The most astute and experienced executives take the call and try to suggest a candidate or two. At the very least, many claim that this is a good way to learn about what is going on in their industry. Going direct. Now, I haven't personally experienced this, but have definitely heard about it, and it is a major faux pas. Job seekers should never try to circumvent the recruiter by going directly to the employer. This usually backfires since it shows both a lack of understanding of the protocol and a failure to respect the arrangement that the employer has decided upon for a certain opportunity. Again, this is particularly true when the search is being handled by a retained recruiter. In these situations, even if the company itself comes up with a potential candidate idea, they will ask the recruiter to evaluate and add the person to the recruiter's assemblage. So mind the process. And finally, make it easy to be found. This last point is important because without heeding the advice, you may not even get practice about what you've learned above. It's impractical to attempt to send your resume to every recruiter that potentially works in your area of expertise. But when you can, you can make yourself easily found. This means, at the very least, have a fully populated and up-to-date LinkedIn profile. Above and beyond that, you should consider joining relevant associations and organizations or groups on LinkedIn, and even getting on the board or leading projects. This will raise your profile and perhaps even get you on their website. You should try to write a blog or articles for relevant publications. Again, this helps people find you. When available, you should be able to speak at appropriate events and serve as a source of information and quotes for the media. Some executives have their own personal website which displays their career history, education, awards, and other career details that help recruiters understand and assess their background. The thrust of this story has been the stumbles and lapses on the part of the job seeker. Make no mistake, recruiters are also prone to errors and oversights as well. So we'll have more on this as the year evolves, but you have to review or look at the recruiter and candidate relationship as a partnership. But always remember, more often than not, people get discouraged when they don't get a job and they blame the recruiter. The recruiter's job is simply to fill the position for the company that hired them and is going to pay their fee. So make sure that you're aware of how the process works so that there's no disappointment if you don't get the job. You're currently listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. We're going to step away for a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the 10 words you should never say during a job interview. We'll be right back.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Hi, this is Joe Peters at Weikert Realtors. If you are considering buying or selling a house this year, you have probably already gathered a lot of information. In a way, that is a little like taking a drink of water out of a fire hose in that you're no longer thirsty and at the same time are a little overwhelmed by all of the information that you have found. This is where I can be of help. As a local real estate market specialist, I can help you by understanding your objectives, showing you how to assemble that information that you've already found, supplementing it with highly accurate and timely data that I have access to, and assisting you in developing a strategy to turn your objectives into reality. Let's start by spending a few minutes over the telephone. Please give me a call at 908-238-0118 to get that process started. If you are considering buying or selling a house this year, we should be talking now. Once again, this is Joe Peters at Weikert Realtors at 908-238-0118. And you could also visit my site at my first initial J, my last name, Peters.com.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HuntertonChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site, and we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
And I've been taking care of business every day, taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business.
Aw, you lucky dog, you. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. I'm your host, Jim Gano, the owner of Crown Trophy, signs by Crown, Crown Custom Apparel, Crown Promotional, and Crown Varsity, all here under one roof at 33 Rayville Avenue in Flemington. Well, there are 10 words that you should never say in a job interview, and talking with some of the folks that are still in the recruiting industry, they hear these terms all the time, and it absolutely shocks me. And you know, one of the things we always used to do with our candidates was prep them on how to act and questions to ask and things like that during an interview. So the fact that some of this is happening really absolutely shocks me. Now, there's plenty of advice out there as far as what to rehearse and about what you're going to say in a job interview. Research questions the interviewer might ask, practice your answers, come up with salient questions of your own. But what about rehearsing what you're not going to say? Here's a list of some words that have actually been used, some terms that have actually been used during job interviews, and why you want to avoid them at all costs. Because even though they seem like just ordinary words, they could be major red flags for an interviewer or a recruiter. First up, the word no. First of all, if asked even a simple question, you don't want to give a single word answer, yes or no. But when the answer is no, you definitely don't want to leave it there. For example, if asked if you know a particular computer program and you don't, you could say, I haven't yet had a chance to learn it, but would be interested to do so, rather than simply saying no. Also, stumbling around saying, that old saying, if you don't have anything to say, don't say anything at all, applies here big. Rather than hemming and hawing while you try to think up an answer, just be silent and think. Saying or too much could make you seem unprepared or as though you're not paying attention. Terms like whatever, OMG, bae, groovy, you have to lose the slang when talking to an interviewer. You want to come across as polished and professional, and you don't want to have them to turn out, you don't want them to have to pull out their Urban Dictionary to understand what you're saying. You want to stay away from terms such as cool, sure, kinda. These kinds of words are just too casual, even in a casual workplace. You should be presenting the best version of yourself, not the sloppy, casual version. The word we. This one seems innocuous at first, but if you use it a lot when discussing job duties and accomplishments, the interviewer might start to wonder if it was you or your team that was responsible for your successes. Try to use I as much as possible. Terms like dedicated, motivated, and team player at first seem like they're good words for a prospective company, but you want to lose the resume speech and jargon. Besides, the fact that these words are incredibly overused in interview situations, they're also better demonstrated than just stated. If you want to convey your dedication or motivation, share an example from your past work experience. Examples will go much further to making your claims believable. You also want to stay away from words such as leverage, synergy, and ideation. Now, I'd avoid using too much business jargon. The chances that you'll come off sounding like an idiot are just too high. Too much business bud words or jargon tends to make people sound pretentious or worse, downright stupid. Another term is hit the ground running or circle back. These kinds of cliches have little to no meaning. They're just verbal fluff, and they don't add anything to what you're saying. So just leave them out of the conversation. You also want to leave out the word hate. I can't think of a single instance when saying you hate something in a job interview is appropriate, but it's exceptionally inappropriate to say anything about hating your former job, boss, or coworkers. And don't use the term perfectionist. It's become almost a cliche in and of itself to answer a question like, "What's your biggest flaw?" With a positive flaw like, "I'm a perfectionist," any good interview will see right through that, so just don't do it. Currently 12:50, you're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on HuntingtonChamberRadio.com. And here are a couple social media tools that can help you cut down management time and increase effectiveness. Found these the other night, thought you might be interested. So for those of you that are actively using social media, here's a couple tools that may help you use that more effectively. Now, social media marketing is one of the highly effective ways to amp up the traffic to your site and generate new leads. To juggle between multiple accounts can be a tough row to hoe without the right social media management tools. These tools come with several features that can help you manage your social media campaign more efficiently. So here are some great examples of such tools. The first is EveryPost. EveryPost is a social media publishing tool which lets you create content from across the web. It lets you schedule posts on multiple accounts. You can also create custom posts using the tool. The interface is user-friendly and with easy access to tabs and content feeds. Number two, Spreadfast. Spreadfast is a social media marketing platform which is largely based on the concept of relevance. The developers at Spreadfast believe that user engagement and participation can be enhanced only by sharing relevant content. The platform helps with content discovery, strategy, and analytics. It also gives you the option to amplify results with targeted paid. It comes with a host of service options that you can opt for based on your requirements. Spreadfast Conversations improve the impact of social media across the business by taking your campaigns to a global level. Spreadfast Experiences allows you to visualize and curate relevant, high-quality content in real time across multiple digital platforms. Spreadfast Spark helps you identify trending content, and Spreadfast Intelligence provides you with the raw materials and data to help you make the right decisions. The next is DrumUp. DrumUp is a free social media content management tool with some groundbreaking features and a super convenient workflow. It uses sophisticated natural language processing algorithms to find and recommend relevant content for sharing on Facebook and Twitter. The queued stories can be easily edited, and custom posts can also be added to the queue. A cool thing about DrumUp is that it always picks out and recommends fresh stories, which means you have a chance of riding the first wave of virality of some popular stories. It's a great tool for small businesses, startups, and social media managers who are often time-strapped but still need to maintain an active social media presence. Social Oomph, OOMPH. Social Oomph is one of the least expensive social media management tools available and comes with several advanced features. Apart from scheduling, it offers URL shortening and account monitoring services. One of the key features of Social Oomph is that it lets you add unlimited accounts to a single dashboard. You'll also be able to follow the right people on Twitter and manage spam, DMs more easily and effectively. Various licensing options are available with Social Oomph. Twitter Unlimited is one of the licenses which provides some key features for tweet management. It is a very good option for someone who is looking to focus entirely on Twitter. Twitter Professional lets you track competitors and creates an automated list of mentions. It also allows you to schedule updates from Facebook, LinkedIn, Plurk, and app.net. You can even create RSS feeds to your blog and manage your Twitter account via Twitter Cockpit. Postling is a centralized dashboard that helps organize, manage, and track all your social media efforts, helping you engage with your online community from a single account. Its design is unique, easy to use, and well laid out. With Postling, you can post on your blog and your social media pages all at the same time. The app also lets you schedule tweets and respond to aggregated comments on any social media platform. The threaded conversations let you access all interactions in a sequence. Another key feature of Postling is that it allows multiple users to be connected to your accounts. The Analytics tab on the dashboard lets you monitor and track activity and performance with visual aids such as statistics and graph. And while some social media tools are designed to optimize a specific social media platform, most others take a multi-platform approach. So there's a couple ways that you can make your social media presence even better. So hopefully you'll be able to take advantage of some of those as well. Currently 12:55, you're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100inchamberradio.com. When we come back next week, one of two things will happen. We'll either have a regular show, or we've invited Ian Church, who's the general manager of the Beaverbrook Country Club, to come in and talk to us about the services that Beaverbrook offers to people that are either having corporate events, weddings, bar mitzvahs, or any other kind of party, as well as golf outings. So we're going to talk to him about the business of running a country club and all of the services that they provide. Coming up this weekend, a big one for me, it's this Sunday, is the Daytona 500. Jeff Gordon will be sitting on the pole. Next to him will be Jimmy Johnson. Tonight, you can watch Daytona qualifying as they run the twin 150s, and that'll set the field to 43 in tonight's qualifying. And again, as I mentioned, Jeff Gordon grabbed the pole in last Sunday's qualifying. A whole lot of stories swirling around. Danica Patrick wrecked her primary car yesterday. Denny Hamlin received significant damage. One Reed Sorensen's team has already gone home due to damage that they received last week and didn't have a backup car to go to. There is the Kurt Busch situation where a restraining order has been issued against him and for his girlfriend so that he doesn't come within a certain distance of her. So whole bunch of drama swirling around the Daytona 500 this year, but it'll be good to have the cars back on the track. The other day I saw a picture of Fenway Park up in Boston, and with all the snow that they've had, at the field level, the snow is now over the right field fence and climbing into the seats. The concourse had about 8 feet of snow in it. So it's hard to imagine that pitchers and catchers have reported in Arizona and Florida for the Grapefruit and Cactus Leagues, but we're just a few weeks away from baseball starting up again. It'll be interesting to see if the snow melts in time in Boston to get Fenway Park up and running. In the NCAA, the basketball AP Top 10 shakes out like this. Kentucky currently holds the top spot, followed by Virginia, Gonzaga, Duke, and Wisconsin. And they hold down the top five positions, while Villanova, Arizona, Kansas, Utah, and Notre Dame round out the top 10. Coming up in future programs, we're going to be talking a little bit more about social media. This is a topic that, at the end of every show, I always ask folks for suggestions. And more and more company owners are asking me to do more on social media. So we may have to break it down with, you know, just one show dedicated to Facebook, one show dedicated to LinkedIn, one show to Twitter and things like that, because they're recognizing now that social media is the marketing wave of the future. They just want to know how to do it right. So we're going to try to poll the experts and find good program content or good guests to come in and walk us through that. And then hopefully that will help your business as well. And as always, we're always looking for the topics that are of interest to you when it comes. The program is called Taking Care of Business. So whether it's something to do with how you run your business, employee issues, employer issues, how to do the right interview techniques, get them to me, and we will do the research and then bring them out on programs in the future. And I think that's going to just about wrap it up for this week. I'm your host, Jim Gano. This has been another edition of Taking Care of Business. As always, it's been my pleasure joining you today, and I always end the show with some great advice that I got from my father when I was just 6 years old, and it guides me in my personal and professional life every day. Maybe you could use it in your lives as well when he said, never let it rest until your good is better and your better is best. If you have ideas for upcoming programming topics or guests, email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn or on Twitter at JimGano83 or on Facebook. I'll talk to you again next week for another edition of Taking Care of Business. Make it a productive week, everybody.
And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business. And working overtime. Work out.
USA Radio News. I'm Kelly Sloan. The Summit on Violent Extremism is ending today. The focus has been on bringing communities together, embracing immigrants, and trying to stop youth from becoming radicalized online. But President Obama is coming under fire for not linking extremism to Islam and for his claim that poverty promotes terrorism.
That feeds instability and disorder and makes those communities ripe for extremist recruitment.
But Middle East expert Waleed Faris told Fox News he refutes that claim and says the ideology is the problem.
If you take a million person who are frustrated in the Middle East or the Arab and Muslim world, why is it that 1,000 among them becomes jihadist? Why not the other 900,000? Because what has impacted those 1,000 is an ideology. So there is no direct link between frustration and becoming a terrorist.
And Secretary of State John Kerry said it would be kind of stupid to just attack those who are currently fighting. This is USA Radio News.
589%. 589%? That is how much more fat you could burn if you were using the 10-2 and a chew weight loss system from ilikehowilook.com. Hi, how in the world are you anyway? I'm Andy Willoughby. A double-blind controlled clinical study showed that the 10-2 and a chew weight loss system burned 589% more fat than exercise and dieting alone. Think how much easier it'll be to lose.